much I need you. Love you all the time and never leave you. Please come on back to me. I'm lonely as can be. I need you.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vanderkirk. Good morning, Bethann.
Good morning. I'm still trying to figure out that opening tune.
That was my nod to George Harrison. It's his birthday, and so many of us had our lives changed by George. I thought that was a little tribute to him.
Well, and thank you for the explanation for those of us who didn't quite clue into that until you said so. Thanks very much. Now, we're going to move on with a conversation that is happening seemingly every time you tune into the news. Now, this week, the Hawaii Department of Health announced that state labs are aiding in the testing of Zika virus samples from American Samoa and the Marshall Islands. The Zika testing ability in our state is fairly new. It was developed the end of last month after a case of possible Zika-related birth defects raised the issue of a potential outbreak in Hawaii. Modeling the what-ifs of an outbreak is also the work of researcher Kevin Olival at the nonprofit EcoHealth Alliance. We talked to him last month when he was home during the holidays. Actually, I'd say, well, more like December, early January when he was home during the holidays. Today, we're reaching him in his New York office. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Bethann. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the time. When we talked last time, we were basically talking about what had been experienced in Hawaii with dengue and the possibilities for that and the fact that Ebola seemingly was ending. But your caveat was, look, there's always going to be a next time. We really weren't talking very much about Zika, but Zika, it seems, has become that next time.
That's right. Yeah, Zika's really taken the world by storm, seems, especially in the last couple months in the news. You know, there are hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of viruses and potential pathogens out there. And so I think what Zika and Ebola and all of these different diseases have in common is that they really point to the fact that we need to be prepared in a much more general fashion than dealing with specific diseases one at a time. And, you know, the dengue outbreak in Hawaii is a huge lesson, ongoing effort to really control that. But the same vectors, the same mosquito species that transmits dengue, right, are also capable of transmitting Zika virus and other viruses in that group. They're called flaviviruses.
At the same time,
dealing with one might give us lessons for the other.
At the same time that we're trying to learn those lessons, we're also being told that, well, there just aren't that many of who can go around and actually check and see whether or not those mosquitoes are breeding, and that we need better vector control and we just don't have the people to do it, which seems to be a pattern that we fall into every time we think something is fine.
Yeah, it's a huge challenge with global health. And, you know, a lot of our EcoHealth Alliance, a lot of our work is international in fairly resource-limited countries. But some of the lessons that apply in those countries in Asia, Africa, Latin America also, of course, apply to richer countries like the U.S. And there's really been sort of a brain drain as far as understanding of vector control and vector-borne diseases. But more importantly, I think it's easy to be short-sighted and say, okay, because we don't have a disease happening right now, let's, you know, cut the budgets for vector control because that's an easy one to go. But what we see time again is this idea of early preparedness is really multifaceted, and one of those is ongoing surveillance. Even when there's not a disease outbreak, we really need to be checking the biological systems, making sure that the human health capacity is built up so that laboratories are ready and have that capacity to test. So, you know, I'll tell you a real quick example of, we have this project that we're working on globally in 30 countries, and it's sponsored by the U.S. government. It's the U.S. Agency for International Development PREDICT project. And really, it's trying to strengthen that core capacity across the world for early detection. And early detection is really the key then to responding and stopping an outbreak in its tracks. And you know, we've done the economics of this, and it's really cost-effective to invest in this now because outbreaks, once they happen, can cost the world billions, if not trillions, of dollars. And so one cool example, I think, and I'll be quick, is there was a case when we were working on this first phase of this project in 2012 in Bolivia, and some of our researchers found dying monkeys on the forest floor. Those monkeys were tested. We developed assays where you can screen for a large number of different viruses at once. And we found yellow fever in those monkeys. And yellow fever is related to dengue and Zika. It's in the same family. And within 8 days, that information from the dead monkeys was transmitted to the Ministry of Public Health in the country, in Bolivia. And they started vector control, and they started informing the public, and there were no human cases. So I think that's a great example of really early detection, and actually you get it before it even gets into people, if possible.
Which is the best scenario, given the fact that you've discovered something that could possibly threaten many lives. In January last month, the World Health Organization said that Zika was likely to spread throughout most of the Americas by the end of this year. Are we taking this seriously enough?
I think the world's taking it quite seriously at this point. I think one of the challenges is once something becomes endemic and established, eradication becomes a much trickier proposition. And so, you know, the U.S. government has put a lot of funds towards Zika research. There's still, you know, this disease, Zika virus, was discovered in 1947. But there's still a lot we don't know about its ecology, its biology, and its impact on humans. So the linkage between microcephaly and Guillain-Barré syndrome, those are all relatively sort of new discoveries, and there's a lot that needs to be understood from the human health side about really what are the impacts of this disease.
And for a lot of people who may not even know that they have it because symptoms are reasonably mild, some say more mild than dengue fever, much more mild.
Yeah, in some ways that makes it more challenging. I think it's something like 1 in 5 cases actually shows symptoms, right? So there's a ton of asymptomatic people that get infected, but they never know that they have it. And so that makes, in some ways, it makes control and detection of a disease much more challenging because, you know, you could be walking around with something and not develop a rash or a fever.
That said, and the fact that, you know, we don't want to monger to fear, but to be reasonably smart about it, being able to activate a population seems to be where your research has gone in a lot of ways, and perhaps what your advice is for Hawaii, given the fact that we don't have enough workers to go out there and work in vector control. We've had messages about people being concerned about the water, still water around their properties and checking for it, but maybe a much more active campaign. How do you see getting people really up and motivated to do this when they may perhaps feel this is still a very far away thing and that the case that we possibly could have seen in Hawaii is just such a possibility that might have been contracted elsewhere so that maybe it's not so much of an issue here? How do you get past all of that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a balance between being alarmist and being realistic about these things. And the truth is, you know, a virus or a disease that emerges in one part of the world can easily spread because of our globalized society to any other part of the planet. And so this whole not in my backyard thing is not a valid approach. I think continuing to inform the public through various media campaigns, I know the Hawaii Department of Health is doing a great job in sort of getting out some of the information to, especially around the dengue outbreak areas. And, you know, citizens do need to be engaged. So I think you're really getting people involved in doing their part for vector control in their backyards, like you said, tipping over the pots that are full of water. All that is going to have an impact. You know, we are going to be – but the other part of it is really, you know, I think investing a large amount of money at the early stages of an outbreak and thinking about vector control is also very important because, again, once these things sort of – grab a foothold, it's a much larger expense and it's a much bigger project to kind of get them out.
Kevin, I wish we had more time, but we'll check in with you periodically. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Kevin Olival is the Associate Vice President for Research at EcoHealth Alliance. The nonprofit researches the intersection of wildlife, ecosystems, and human health. Highlights from his research include the first detected evidence of Ebola virus in mainland Southeast Asian bats, and building models to predict the emergence of disease that can jump from animals to humans. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. It's now 8:14. Coming up, a world premiere play about the conflict between electronic reality and, you know, the other kind. But first, here's your backyard quiz.
O ka ho'olawe, o hawaiti.